Biltmore Oswald, The Diary of a Hapless Recruit by Thorin Smith. May 6th. Man the drags! Hey there, you flannel-footed camel, stop galloping! What are you doing anyway, playing horses? Don't be ridiculous, I cried out, hot with rage and humiliation. You know perfectly well I'm not playing horse. I realize as well as you do that this is a serious... At this juncture, my brave retort a gun barrel stove in the back of my head. Someone kicked me on the shin, and in some indescribable manner the butt of a rifle became entangled between my feet, and I went down in the cloud of dust and oaths. 1/4 of the entire Pelham Field Artillery passed over my body, together with its crew, while through the roar and confusion raised by this horrible cataclysm, I could hear innumerable CPOs scowling and blackguarding me in frenzied tones, and I dimly distinguished their forms dancing in rage amid descending billows of dust. The parade ground swirled dizzily around me, but I had no desire to arise and begin life anew. It would not be worthwhile. I felt that I had at the most only a short time to live, and that that was too long. The world offered nothing but the most horrifying possibilities to me. What is the Biltmore to a man in uniform, anyway? I remember thinking to myself as I lay there with my nose pressed flat to an anthill, all the best parts of it are arid districts, waste places, limitless Saharas to him. Death, where is thy sting? I continued as an outraged ant assaulted my nose. The world came throbbing back. I felt myself being dragged violently away from my resting place. I was choking. Bidding farewell to the ants, I prepared myself to swoon when gradually, as if from a great distance, I heard the voice of my PO. He was almost crying. "Take him out," he pleaded. "For God's sake, take him out. He's hurting our gun." This remark gave me the strength to rise, but not gracefully. My intention was to address a few hand-picked words to this PO of mine, but fortunately for my future peace of mind, I was beyond utterance. Weakly, I tottered in the direction of the gun, hoping to support myself upon it. "Hey, come away from that gun," howled the PO. "Don't let him touch it, fellers," he pleaded. "Don't let him even go near it. He'll spoil it. He'll completely destroy it." "Say, buddy," said the chief to me, and how I hated the ignominy of the word. "I guess I'll take you out of the game for today. I'm responsible for government property, and you are altogether too big a risk." "What shall I do?" I asked huskily. "Where shall I go?" "Do?" he repeated in a thoughtful voice. "Go? Well, here's where you can go," and he told me. "And this is what you can do when you get there." And as I departed rather hastily, he told me this also. The entire parade ground heard him. How shall I ever be able to hold up my head again in camp? I departed the spot, but only under one boiler. However, I made fair speed. Like a soldier returning from a week in the trenches, I sought the comfort and seclusion of the YMCA. Here I witnessed a checker contest of a low order between two unscrupulous brothers. They had a peculiar technique completely their own. It consisted of arts and dodges and an extravagant use of those adjectives one is commonly supposed to shun. "Say, there's a queen down at the end of the room," one of them would suddenly exclaim, and while the other brother was gazing eagerly in that direction, he would deliberately remove several of his men from the board. But the other brother, who was not so balmy as he looked, would occasionally discover the slight irregularity and proceed to express his opinion of it by word of mouth, which, for sheer force of expression, was in the nature of a revelation to me. It was appalling to sit there and watch those two young men, who had evidently at one time come from a good home, sit in God's bright sunshine and cheat each other throughout the course of an afternoon and lie out of it in the most obvious manner. The game was finally discontinued, owing to a shortage of checkermen which they had secreted in their pockets, a fact which each one stoutly denied with many weird and rather indelicate vows. I left them engaged in the pleasant game of recrimination, which had to do with stolen golf balls, and holding out of change and kindred sordid subjects. In my weakened condition, this display of fraternal depravity so offended my instinctive sense of honor that I was forced to retire behind the protecting pages of a 1913 issue of The Farmer's Wife Indispensable Companion, where I managed to lose myself for the time in a rather complicated exposition of how to tell which chicken laid what egg, if any, or something to that effect, an article that utterly demolished the moral character of the average hen, leaving her hardly a leg to roost on.